find out what it's like to experience the world from above. Fly your own drone today. DroneCloneExperts.com specializes in high-quality, affordable drones. Now introducing their Limitless 2 model, equipped with a 4K camera for stunning Ultra HD clarity, GPS with precision auto return, and up to 25 minutes flight time on a single charge. Visit DroneCloneExperts.com now and enter promo code RADIO to receive 15% off your entire order. That's DroneCloneExperts.com.
This is Josie Cotton, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Oh, hello, everybody. Hi, Michael. How are you?
Welcome to the show, everybody.
Wow, you're bringing more energy than I expected.
That's all I had.
That was.
Yeah, I just threw my load out there. And
God, can you not throw your load out to everybody? No one wants your load.
I mean, it's been very tiring. I've had to do it 2 times a week for the past 3 months. So, I mean.
Well, this is where we switch it on everyone, and we just do it once every 3 months after this.
Ooh.
4 episodes a year.
It's like one of them shops that just impromptu opens and then closes down the next day.
Right, right. But hello, everybody. I am Scott, and that is Mike, and you are tuning in to Verbal Shenanigans Podcast. Happy to be back. We've been, if you're just tuning in for the first time, we are a, the best way to describe it is a radio kind of style podcast. We just like to bring interesting guests on, and we also talk about life and things like that. So, welcome to the show. You are joining us around episode 305 today. Coming off one of my favorite guests to date last week, which Mr. Kevin Eastman, creator of the Ninja Turtles. Short, but sweet. It was a really...
By the way, I went to the comic book store. I've yet to see our pictures on any of the Mutant Turtles.
It's funny. I meant to send him a picture of us and be like, you know, if you're feeling like it, draw us into the comic.
Yeah, I mean, I don't need to be anything special. Like, show me as like an unmasked Foot Clan member.
See, like,
just, I get whacked.
I feel like you would be like, oh, I should be like the enemy of the new Turtles. Like, I should be the main guy. Not
you see me like bumping off Shredder and just be like, ha! Now I can take over the world.
Right. I think it's called The Last Ronin. So, like, you think you probably should be the main character in that.
Well, I mean, I was going to be a person of humbleness, but since you remind me of the kind of person I am, all right, let's move forward with that request. I mean, did he give us an address that I can go to so he can take some live photos of me? You know, I mean, I don't want the artwork to be disparaged because of a bad photo.
This would be a great time to be like a villain in real life because you could be masked all the time. You could blend in among people. Like, this is a great time for like bank robbers and, you know, assassins because it could be like anybody.
Is there ever a bad time for assassins out of curiosity?
I mean, yes. When they're coming after you is generally a bad time.
That is true. I do disperse of assassins quite often.
Right.
I do,
right.
You know. I will say a couple, I think it was like 2 nights ago, I had a
hold on, stop, terror. Freeze. Oh, damn it, it was a nightmare. I wanted you to stop and me try to guess the segue to assassins. Like a couple nights ago, and then I had to fill in the blank what happened.
It's one of those really weird to tell the truth kind of game shows where it's... You just show up and you say just last night, and then the panel has to figure out what happened.
Right.
But like, honest, I think it was about two nights ago. I had, I think I talked about it before, like a recurring nightmare I have is like halfway in sleep or waking up thinking I see somebody like standing over me inside the house. And okay. I had one of those and the wife literally said, I've never, you had the loudest voice on the planet and somehow you have outdone yourself with the scream that you did that night. And then she couldn't sleep for the rest of the night.
So you let another blood-curdling scream out.
Yeah, like, it was probably like midnight, 12:30, something like that. I'm struggling with sleep. I think I went to sleep, and like I said, I think I was in that halfway where, like, the subconscious is working, but at the same time, you're feeling awake.
Yeah.
And it was just one of those moments and all. I just had a vision of like four or five people just like staring at me from the foot of the bed. And
wow.
I just let one out. And needless to say, the wife's heart didn't calm down and she did not go back to sleep for the rest of the night. So
that I like that you thought five guys were at the foot of your bed and then you're like, oh, sorry. And then just went right back to bed.
Yeah, well, I felt bad because it's the usual five guys that show up in my house at 12:30.
Good.
That is you, Jim. I'm sorry. I didn't recognize you since you shaved your mustache.
Not the guys from the burger company. Like, you know, the five guys. Oh, it's the usual guys that are just hanging out.
Yeah. I mean, it's just so awkward. They're like, oh, Berlu.
Well, Berlu, I'm in a good mood today. I'm in a good mood after a bad mood. It's kind of interesting how that works. Like, it's like, you know, like yesterday was a crap day. Today was kind of busy. And then I'm just coming off doing a virtual comedy show. Number three, Virtual Shenanigans, if you will, part three, for the same company that's hired us twice before. Yeah, so I got this, like, I called it to my wife. I was peacocking. I was, like, bouncing around. She's like, you're in a good mood. I'm like, yeah, I'm in a good mood. A couple weeks ago, I was in a crap mood on the podcast. And then yesterday, I was in a crap mood. But today, I don't know what it is. I made a joke the other day that, because it popped up on my timeline, that my last comedy show was March 14th. March 14th. So that's over three months now. Mm. And most of the audience was like 70 years old. So I said, that was the death of my comedy career. And probably most of these people are didn't make it either. Because that was like pandemic spreading times. And so officially since March 14th, I've done three virtual comedy shows and like 800 podcasts. But that's basically it. No real live audience. And
you have my attention.
Yeah, great. Barely.
I mean, only for the next like 5 minutes or so.
Yeah. All right. I'll make it quick.
It's 8:30. I'm sure something's good on ABC.
I'll make it quick. So it's funny because I do the virtual comedy show and it's always this ball of nerves like a day and a half beforehand. I'm like, oh God, oh God. And it's kind of the same feeling I got when I hosted every single show at Tap House, our comedy show that we do. And I started to get in my head, like, they know all my material. They know all my material is going to be weird. And like, so all day I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, I have no new jokes. And then it's funny because I jump in the shower because that's where I rehearse like a crazy person. And I just start running some jokes that have been in my head. I'm like, you know what? What are you worried about? I got paid already, first off. So like, I was like, well, you know, you're not earning your pay tonight if you fail. And then I jump on. I had a great lineup, Lynette Palladino, Mike Burton, and Mike Gaffney. So Mike Burton and Mike Gaffney are two, they headline all over the country. I knew we were safe there. And it was a small group, maybe 25, and it turned out a lot of fun, man. And it's just like, I don't know, man. This must be like how a drug addict feels after like being clean for like 3 months and finally getting that like hit. Like, oh man, like that was good. Even though it was like you know, 10 awkward minutes in front of my TV, you know, like with a computer hooked up and a microphone. It's just, I don't know, man. I can't explain it. It's just hearing some feedback from your jokes and just doing some crowd work, quote unquote, was a good feeling, man. It put me in a good mood.
I like the comparison of your comedy career to somebody's life going into shambles because they went back to drugs. I've seen your act before. It's a good one for one right there.
Right.
But I didn't feel that you could literally bring out that comparison.
I don't think all drug addicts are in shambles. Otherwise, they wouldn't be drug addicts. You know, like they're not, they got to be having some kind of good time on it.
Well, obviously they're in some enjoyment, but I don't think it's like, all right, Jim, yeah, that whole alcoholism was bringing you down. It's good to see you back on the juice.
Right, right. But I don't know, put me in a good mood because yesterday's mood was absolute dog crap. I guess I can get into that real quick before we get to our guest here. But yesterday I'm sitting on a merge going, it's a standstill, thank God, actually. But it was like maybe 20 cars merging onto this small highway by my house. And you know where this is going. I go to kind of lean in. There's a car coming. I hit the brakes. And the guy behind me in a dump truck did not hit the brakes.
Mm.
So now I got a brand new car, which is ironic because both times I've ever had a brand new car, I got into an accident in the first 5 months of having it. Yeah, it's great. So he rammed into the back of my Jeep and, you know, it's immediately, it's like, God damn it. You know, like, you know, what? I know the thing is, thank God you're okay. I get that. I'm not saying that's not the main purpose, but it's still a bummer. It's still your car. You still have a little pity party for yourself, you know. And it's more about the insurance and the mechanic and all that crap that you got to go through afterwards. But, you know, he hits me and immediately he's a big dump truck. So immediately he gets out and he's like, oh, sorry, that was my fault. You stopped a little shorter than I thought. And I was looking to the left and I ran into you. And he's like, oh, crap, it's a brand new car. I'm like, yeah, it's a brand new car. Like, but it's like, I'm a pretty calm. I don't like conflict that much. And I was just kind of like, it's all right, man. You know, it's an accident. That's why it's called an accident. Like, I'm okay. You're okay. My car is drivable. It's not, you know, it's not ruined. That would be awful, but not good.
I think I would have enjoyed the cursing match where you guys were still doing social distancing.
Yeah.
Like, I just, like, you seen you in rage, but, like, the guy's coming up without a mask. You're like, whoa, 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 whoa. It's not worth that. Come yeah, on. Yeah. Come on.
Well, it was pretty funny because I walked out of my car. He walked out of his. And then it was this awkward, like, dance of, like, oh, crap, he doesn't have a mask on. And I had my mask in my hand, and he had his mask in his hand. And then we, like, talked for a second. And then I went back to my car, and then I put my mask on. Like, it was just like, oh, man, like, no one knew what to do, and it's just like another thing. And the best part about that was I got into the accident. I was on my way. I was on my way to getting my ankle reevaluated, which has been, if you tune into this podcast at all, it's been basically a lingering injury for a year, and I'm trying to figure out if surgery is the option, and on my way there, I get rear-ended by a dump truck. Well, so it was great.
Maybe this could be like a blessing in disguise. Maybe we could get like a hammer or something and get some bone chips in there.
Okay.
So that way you can get paid for it.
Oh, so maybe I pull the whole, oh, my ankle hurts from the accident. And
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and then somebody's like, well, didn't you bring it up? No, it wasn't this bad. Oh, yeah. God.
Then their lawyer finds, like, the three MRIs I've had, like, from the end of the last year. And he's like, he's got ruptured tendons for the last year. What's going on here?
Yeah, well, they're like, double ruptured now. I mean, I mean, what I was doing, every time I get to an intersection, I like to pick up my foot very high so when I hit the gas pedal, I can take off extra fast. And then when the dump truck hit me, that's when my leg got contorted into the windshield, hence the issues that I have in my lower capacities.
Right. I mean, that's pretty clear and confident. So I think that works. But yeah, so
I should be your lawyer for that case.
I'm a lawyer.
My expertise is bird law.
So it was just like one thing after the other yesterday. I don't care who you are. Your car gets hit, especially if it's new. You're kind of like, this sucks. You know, like it's like, I just got this thing. I'm trying to be good with it. I'm trying to keep it clean and not have stuff all over. And it's like, you know, you get rear-ended. And it's like, all right. But so then I ended up going to the doctor after that. I got a second appointment. And it's basically the same old, same old. It's like, you could have surgery, but she's like, it's 6 weeks in a cast, no weight bearing, so not even like hobbling around, which I could take hobbling around like in a boot or something, but and then it is another couple weeks. This is my right ankle to be able to drive. You have to be able to slam on the brakes, and then
well, clearly we found out that's optional.
Yeah, and then it's I have work where I got to be on my feet during the summer, God willing. Anyway, I have a baby coming, and in the middle of summer where I can't even go for a swim in a cast sounds horrific. It does not sound like the life I want. So I asked her what else we can do. We're going to try another round of PT here and some anti-inflammatories and see what happens.
See, I feel you should do the man thing and hold off that surgery until the baby comes.
Right.
So you're like, I'd love to go over there and change the baby's diaper, but you know, we're only a week in, babe. Right. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, that's just weird coincidence scheduling right there. The whole knee versus baby thing.
So you're saying use it already as an excuse, like already start building that.
Yeah.
In. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then. Then you're like, she's like, oh, our baby's having, you could have your first steps the same time as your baby's having your first steps.
Oh,
amazing.
Maybe I'll teach her how to walk quicker just because we're both learning. You know, they always say the second kid learns from the first kid.
Well, that'd be awesome. You know, like Alex is like, come on, little one. Come on, little one. Oh, come on, big one. You too. You're almost there. Come on, get off your feet. Get off on your butt. Come on. You can do it, Scotty. Who wants a beer? Who wants a beer?
It's not a bad idea. Not a bad idea. But
see, I'm looking out for you and your family. Not much your wife, but you.
But yeah, I'm in a good mood now. I mean, it's a car is a car. Ankle's a little bit more upsetting than the car, to be honest. It's just like constantly living in pain and swelling and like instability. But you know,
curiosity, what's the state with the car itself? What is damaged?
We'll find out on Wednesday. So I'll take it into the shop on Wednesday. It's drivable, so
All right.
Let's see. And as long as they pay for it, it's okay. But you know, it still sucks. But you know what is stable, Mike? Here's a good segue. You like this? You know what is stable? Our ability to get interesting guests.
Ooh, I like how you did
that. That was a good one, right? That's like a radio pro.
Why don't you call our next guest a dump truck
when he
comes on?
Well, I'm not going to call her a dump truck. I'm actually going to call her an 80s icon.
Ooh, I like that.
No, she was very famous in the 80s. She had a couple songs that got her some notoriety and whatnot. Her songs have been the soundtracks of Jackass Number 2 and Valley Girl. You might know her from Johnny, Are You Queer? Or He Could Be the One. We have a very iconic, very unique Miss Josie Cotton joining the podcast. So, Mike, let's get Josie on the one.
After you, hobbler.
Hello?
Hi, Josie. It's Scott from Verbal Shenanigans. How are you?
Hey, Scott. I'm good. How about yourself?
I'm great. Let me just merge in my co-host real quick. Mike, Josie, Mike.
Hey.
Evening, Josie.
Yes.
So, Josie, first off, thank you for thanks for giving us a couple minutes here on the show. We got to ask everybody we've talked to, where are you during this whole pandemic, and what is it like where you're at?
Well, I'm in my house, and I have a menagerie of animals surrounding me, so I don't speak English so well anymore.
All right. That was not the answer I was expecting.
Yeah. So if I, sound like a dolphin at some point, don't be alarmed. But I'm looking out. It seems so uneventful and calm and beautiful, and you would never know
there's a global pandemic. Right.
Yeah.
Where are you at? What?
Right now I'm in L.A.
Oh, L.A. Okay.
Oh,
wow.
I don't know if you know it. Silver Lake is kind of East L.A.
Right.
And yeah. So where are you guys?
I'm in New Jersey. Mike's in Georgia.
Both kind of hot spots, huh? Right now,
definitely New Jersey. That's for sure.
Yeah, New Jersey.
Big
time.
Georgia, we're just like, we'll figure it out. Open everything up.
Yeah.
Just let it fly.
But I can't even get into your music before you said you're surrounded by a menagerie of animals. We got to know what kind of animals you're hanging around.
Oh well, I mean they're not exotic animals, but I have a dog and I have three very neurotic cats, and there's a mouse has come taken up residence. And
you got three cats and you still got a mouse?
They're not interested at all. They have all of their natural instincts have left. They just, are not interested. And so he was so cute. And normally I would call, somebody or a friend to help me retrieve the mouse humanely. But he's actually very polite. And so I'm just going with that. Yeah.
All right. So you're not Josie
like,
Exotic.
I'm stuck in here. I want more company. That's the best way of doing it.
That's it. Yeah.
So Josie, I gotta ask you. You've been now like, you've been now in the music industry for, you're going on your fifth decade at least. How do you find ways to kind of, find a balance between keeping the thing that your fans expect from you, but also, reinventing yourself over and over and over again.
Oh, you just made me really depressed. My fifth decade.
Yeah, that's cool, right?
Well, I think
that's
no,
cool.
No, I mean, depends on how you look at it. But, since the 80s, for sure. Yeah, the 80s. What was the question again? That went through me.
I was saying, how do you... No, I think I see. I wish I was making music for five decades. It's cool. but how do you balance that idea of, giving your fans a Josie Cotton? They know and expect, but also trying to reinvent yourself and keep putting out... new music.
Yeah, that's tough because if you're from the 80s, which it's how I started,
right.
People want you to stay the same. You're branded and for life and Scarlet Letter, all that. And you are expected by some people to never change.
Right.
And that's been tough because... I've loved changing stylistically and just going into musical directions that they are not familiar with. That's tricky. But some of my fans have followed me through all these different gyrations, and I'm happy that they have kept up with my things. And I've just started doing 80 shows. I had never done them before.
Mm-hmm.
I had really turned down a lot of things because I don't know, I just wanted to move on and they won't let me. So
yeah.
So 2019 I started doing these giant shows, and the fans have been amazing. I mean, that's their lives, and they're very thrilled to have their memories brought back to life. And so who am I to hurt them by
playing a song they don't know at that in those shows.
Right.
But you know, when I do live shows with my band, I can incorporate a whole vista and sneak some stuff in that they don't know what they're hearing.
Nice.
Who was your influences growing up? Like, when I started listening to some of your earlier music, I get a lot of really cool, like, 50s, 60s kind of vibes. I'm just curious if there was somebody in particular, or it's just how your singing style is.
I was listening to a lot of girl groups, also Wanda Jackson, and there were some incredible singers that I would imitate, Dusty Springfield. I mean, that's how I learned was making my voice do what their voices were doing, and you kind of learn nuances of singing, and then you hopefully find your own style eventually. But it was always female singers, and I started studying Tammy Wynette way after I moved to Los Angeles, who was an amazing singer. And, you know, I just always, you know, kept up with that.
So we talked to so many awesome musicians on this show. And Mike will probably roll his eyes as I ask this, but I love asking people about their writing process and how they go about approaching a song or approaching an album. What do you do? What is your, like, is your process you write the songs on a guitar with yourself, or do you write with your band and jam it out? Do you write the lyrics first? Do you have a tune and then add lyrics? What is your process?
Yeah, it's usually, well, there's a few different ways. I don't know how to write with other people. I guess that's a problem.
Right.
But I've always wanted to, but I've always written by myself. And what I will do is I will be playing guitar, and some kind of melody happens, and then I have some music, and there's that way. And then there's sometimes I hear a title, like, you know, in country western, it's all about the title of a song, and I was trained that way as a songwriter. So I will hear an amazing, you know, phrase, and I go, oh my God, that should be, I've got to do a song about that. And then sometimes it's a feeling. It just has to be, it has to have an outlet in that moment. So, and then sometimes it's all those things come together in one song. It'll have to be kind of Frankenstein together, like, well, this is the melody I like, but here's another, right, some words I wrote down. So then it kind of comes together like that. But it's hard. It's painful. Writing is painful. I just was in a writing, trying to write right now, and I just couldn't flow. It was just writer's block, classic, you know, depression afterwards, and just like, oh my God, why is it so hard? Sometimes it's they seem to write themselves, and sometimes it's very agonizing.
One of your big hits in the 80s was Johnny, Are You Queer? That was originally from the Go-Go's. I mean, tell me about how they presented it to you and what kind of spin you wanted to do on them when you performed it.
Well, my producers, the Payne Brothers, were working with the Go-Go's, and they wrote the song for the Go-Go's, and they were also working with Fear, the punk rock band Fear, and so they kind of combined the Go-Go's sound with kind of more of a punk, element to the song, which there is. And that was their song they would do live. They never recorded it. And when they parted ways, the Payne Brothers took back their song. They had a falling apart. And so they were just trying to make a demo, and I was the singer on the demo, and that is actually what the record is. It was a demo tape that we did, and it got signed by Bump Records.
So how do you keep like, what is your goal to, like, reach new audiences? You have, like, a very specific vibe, and I know you had Invasion of the B-Girls and a lot of new things coming out. How do you keep up with trying to reach new audiences?
I don't.
What are you talking about? You said you have a new mouse in the house. Yeah.
I have a new mouse. But I mean, I'm all, you know, musicians neurotically, you know, but not surprisingly, want to be heard. I mean, I'm always open and wanting for more and more people to hear my music. All I can do is just do what's in front of me, and I have a really good manager now, and I have a record company with some different partners, and we're able to release a lot of my music. Wasn't heard very much because I don't know why, just everything got all messed up, and so I'm kind of in the middle of re-releasing my whole catalog,
right,
which a lot of people haven't heard, so it's like new music to them, and I think it holds up. Like, it doesn't sound dated at all. So that's what I'm in the process of doing. And also, I'm in the middle of making a new record, but the whole pandemic thing shut it down like everybody else. So everything is at a standstill, and I'm just lucky I have things I can keep putting out there during that.
Yeah, awesome.
Now, what is your favorite type of B-movie, out of curiosity? Some people like the underground horror movies, like the cheesy action. What is your go-to type of B-movie?
Yeah, you know, it covers so many different types of movies. B-movie is such a, you can say Russ Meyer is a B-movie maker, his initial movies, but they're really artistic, and one of them was high budget, so it's really hard to say. I've just always loved science fiction and horror movies and B movies and exploitation movies and all this, but I like the really strange, weird, creepy ones. I think not too much blood, but something like Basket Case. It's not a vintage movie, but did you ever see that movie?
Oh yeah. One was great. I don't remember if I saw two. I remember three was on a farm, and they had like a family of like freaks. So
yeah.
I mean, that right there is just describing that. It's like, now I got to go find Basket Case 3 again.
I know. I mean, it's so demented. There's something so wrong with it, and I just love that feeling. I don't know. But, yeah, so that's not even really a B-movie. It's just like, I don't know what you even call that. But it is definitely really demented. And I never saw the other ones. I just saw the original one. But I've just started reading this book on the actual freaks from the circuses and going back in time. And there were some parasitic twins that were much more insane than Basket Case. There was this one fellow who had a parasitic twin who was coming out of his mouth.
What?
And they have a picture of him. Just crazy. And then some of them were born with faces. Their parasitic twin was looking at them. Their face was like inches apart, and wow, the face was always moving, but there was no brain activity. Crazy stuff. So that movie is not even, you know, as bad as really some of those
right,
what some of those people went through. My God,
are those going to be your next album cover?
That will be my next album cover. Yes, that's my new aesthetic, the parasitic twinning.
You should go out like with a prosthetic.
I'm looking at some Google images. I'm not sure if I can continue this interview.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry, guys.
Maybe you should go like get like a little prosthetic twin on your shoulder and tour as the parasitic twin and just be yourself.
Yeah, I could do that. I could.
A little duet action.
Yeah, I could just just live the B-movie reality and Circus Freak at the same time, but they were paid money to those people. I don't think they do that anymore, so I don't know. those people they're always quarantining, you know,
right.
Those poor souls.
So, Aww. So you've seen such a change in the music industry. I mean, the 80s, obviously, everything based on record sales, physical record sales. And now we're in the age of streaming and you, the advantage, obviously, being you can connect with fans all over the world with the click of a mouse and whatnot. But, you know, selling music is very hard. And now whether you got a pandemic where touring, which is the big thing with you know, making money and whatnot.
Yeah.
How have you reacted to kind of the shift in the music industry and you know, one, being able to connect with fans, but two, you know, selling physical records is a tough, tough, tough thing.
It's tough. I mean, it wasn't all fun and games in the 80s either.
No.
There was a lot of really kind of, you know, mob bosses running the whole thing, and it wasn't as efficient as Coca-Cola was, just getting people to actually get your records in the stores. From that was my experience. I was shocked at the incompetence of Elektra Records at the time. It was just, my God, mm-hmm. Can't Coca-Cola put my record out? Because I know they can get them in the stores.
Right.
You know, that kind of a thing. But artistically speaking, I think there is so much incredible music, and because of the internet, you can hear music and that you weren't exposed to necessarily during your time on Earth. And
no.
And I mean, just meeting people who know my music, kids in their 20s, and they know exactly who I am. And you know, I disappeared for a while, and I don't really even understand, like, how do you know me? what is this?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's great. And I mean, that's a wonderful thing. It, like, good music doesn't die the way it used to. It keeps going. So in terms of the selling of things, vinyl has made a huge comeback.
It sure has.
So that's been kind of wonderful. And putting out things digitally, of course, is much a easier thing. Making albums now is not the most desired thing. People put out singles now and EPs. Mm-hmm. Whole records are almost considered passe. I remember Sheryl Crow not too long ago said she wasn't going to make any more albums because albums were obsolete. But I do love the way a record tells a story and people seem to still want them, although it takes so much more time. I think doing a single at a time is kind of the direction I'm taking right now.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, I'm still a sucker for the hands on the vinyl and the, I don't know, there's something tangible about having the record spinning in the in the living room or whatnot. But yeah, I also stream singles and find bands I would have never found in a million years. So I'm kind of like a hybrid of the two. But Josie, I want to thank you so much for giving us a couple minutes on the show. I hope your new music and whatnot finds new audiences and you keep reinventing yourself. If people want to go check you out or listen to your music, where's the best place for them to go?
Well, my website, I don't even know if websites are still legitimate, but I do have one, josiecottonmusic.com. And I'm all over Josie Cotton Official on Instagram. And I'm on all formats now. I'm like whoring it out now. I'm just doing it everywhere.
Josie, thank you so much, and
thank
I hope you.
You
have a
thank you guys.
Stay safe with your cats and the new mouse.
Oh yes, yes, I haven't named him yet. I just don't know yet.
You can name him Shenanigans after us. So
okay.
There you go.
All right, guys. Well, you be safe.
You too. All right, Mike. Josie Cotton. Mikey, are you queer?
Unless I check, no.
I wonder if that's like a term that's not even like cool anymore. Like I don't know. Like I wonder if when she made that song, it was a whole different context.
I think because that was a cover of somebody else who did it.
Yep.
So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's different times for different days. I mean, if anything, I would say in the 80s, it was probably a worse term than it is today. Now it's a part of the initials.
Absolutely.
Of the it's not a community. So, I mean,
yeah. I mean, so it should be good. I mean, we're in an era where people are getting upset, Mike, upset about them changing the logo of a maple syrup company. This is the world we live in now. Aunt Jemima. Yeah. So the people, they want this like old racist image of a kind of slave-like African-American woman on their maple syrup. It's a staple of their culture. I've gone as far as to see people say, my childhood is ruined. Why you snowflake? God, I need my... If your childhood is ruined over a maple syrup, one, you're probably really fat because it was probably like, all my good times were spent with Aunt Jemima, you know? Like,
my mom and dad used to work and all I did was stay at home and chug maple syrup.
But
it was depressing, but I was happy.
If there are people that are offended by it, what good is it keeping it?
I guess what it just boils down to is every time something changes, everybody has to have a gripe about it. Everybody has to have an opinion on it.
It's maple syrup.
Like, if your neighbor paints their house, nobody, like, rolls down the window and goes, I grew up with that house being white. What the hell is this baby blue doing up there?
Yeah.
I will not stand for it. I will not be your neighbor anymore. But since it's my childhood.
Like, well, maybe your childhood was rich with privilege and like fat syrupy foods. Maybe that was your childhood. The syrup's going to be the same. It's going to have a tiny little new logo. Your life will be okay.
Brutally honest, my parents always got the generic brand, so I would only have to get mad if A&P changes their name.
They got Uncle Jemima.
What? You're telling me you're not calling it ShopRite maple syrup anymore? What the fuck?
they got ShopRite's Miss Jemima syrup. It's just like, God, like, I got to be honest with you, in this culture that we've been in a long time, I can't believe your team, the Redskins, has been able to hold on, man, to that name. I cannot believe it.
I think it's eventually on the way. I will be honest in saying I'm a little half and half on, like, right. The AOC chirp back at the Redskins about that, where I'm kind of like, I can understand your point, but at the same time, I'm kind of like, we kind of got bigger problems than the Redskins name right now. I see both sides.
Right.
What it boils down to, I've said it many times on this show, the easiest way to get this all settled is the owners got to basically come together and say, okay, one, you're going to change your name. Two, as a league, we're going to pay for everything. You're going to figure out what your new name is. We're going to pay for everything that's got to be produced so you can sell memorabilia.
Yeah,
and
maybe
all that
some like market
stuff.
Market research on what name would really go over well. You know.
Yeah. And then also add to it, you ought to have a program that says, okay, we're all going to be super against this stuff. If I bring in like one of my Redskins jackets, I can get it in exchange for a Red Rockets or, you know,
the Arrows,
the Patriots, the Arrows, or whatever you're going to plan it to be, because that's the only way this is all going to get finished up.
Here's a question to a Redskins fan. You're able to, next year, you change the name, but in the same turn, you're able to get rid of Daniel Snyder in the same move. Are you down for it?
Yeah, I mean, I got to see what he does this year. I think this is the first year his eyes open where it's like, you got to stop bringing in these yes men and allow somebody to run the team that's going to piss you off a couple times and see the different results. But, yeah, it hasn't been smooth sailing since the little boy took over our team. I got to be honest with you.
So, Redskins.
So I'm in an interesting spot, considering I'm in my basement, because in front of me, as I'm staring, is all my Redskins gear hung up.
Right.
To the left of me is my NASCAR stuff, where they're doing better. We got rid of the Confederate flag.
Everything around you is evolving.
Yeah. Oh, no. But don't forget also, over on my little display here, I got the General Lee over here.
Yeah.
My little toy car. And for just for the heck of it, if you want to get really super technical, on the other side, I have an Atlanta Braves 92 photo op. So I guess in essence, I'm surrounded by possibly a ton of racism.
You might basically lose all your team. You might everything might be gone. Your man cave might go from man cave to museum very quickly.
Where are you going? I'm going to the Southern History Museum. Why? Because I miss my football team.
Because I want to hang with my cat.
I miss everything that used to make me happy. I was one of the good people.
So you completed your first marathon. Segueing from racism into marathons. We are very good at segues. That's all I'm saying.
Absolutely perfect. Yeah. We did it this past weekend. I will kind of show you my little, that's just my name, our little awards that we got.
Irona Marathon.
Yeah, this was handmade. So we did a virtual one. It wasn't like a group of people running. It was the three of us. We basically did the We Have No Choice But to Run It marathons, where you run 13.1 miles in one direction.
Okay.
And the car is on the other side. So you
basically I would do good with that one, because I'd be like, well, we got to get out of here. So let's keep it moving, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So survived. The time I put up was about a little over 6 hours, but I think with distance, the weird thing when you're going by these apps is you never know the official answer of when you have done your 26.2, because literally all three of us who ran it had two apps open, and all six in total had a different mileage.
Yeah.
So interesting. I think we actually went further to come back to go back to. So I think I got it under 6 hours, which...
Okay.
I'm kind of happy with it.
First off, you shouldn't even worry about your time. You should just be like, hey, I just did a marathon. You went from no running to a marathon in what, 2 years?
Well, the Nike Run Club app that we have on there says my first run that I have documented was in June of last year. So in less than a year, I've done a marathon. Yes.
It's only been a year? Wow. All right. There you go.
June or July, one of them. So, yeah.
That shows you guys that, anyone listening, that it's very possible, because Mike was not a runner.
Mike was barely a walker.
That's true. Mike almost needed a walker at one point.
it boiled down to it just wasn't jogging. Just wasn't my thing. Wasn't really an exercise. A wife got into it. She dragged me into it. Okay. All right. We're doing a 5K. Blah, 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 blah. No. I'm not going to do a 10K. Do a 10K. Blah, blah, blah. No, I don't want to do a half a marathon. Blah, blah, blah. No, I don't want to do a half a marathon. Do a half marathon. Mm-hmm. You can do a marathon. No, I can't. No, I can't. You can do it. Now we're having this conversation.
So what was the difficulty level? You've been training for a while. You've been running kind of consistently for a year. So what's the difference now? You've done some pretty long runs. Did you really feel it, or did the adrenaline take over? That you're really hurting by the end?
I never got this whole runner's high that I always hear about. It's never kicked in.
I've never gotten that ever.
So that's a mystery. I would say I was probably feeling it around mile 21, 22. The side of my knee, the IT band, I was
it wasn't as bad as like when I did my first half marathon or when we kind of walked it and like I could barely walk for a week and a half after.
Okay.
It was a little sore, but after one night of sleep, it was all right. I would say the biggest balance is making sure you're slow early on, because always when you're early on, you're like, I can go faster than this. I can do so much better. I'm feeling great, not realizing the kind of turnaround time. I'll give a shout out to one of our running friends who literally got up at the crack of dawn, only knew me and my wife from like one excursion. And all, he was more friends with the third person we run with, my neighbor, but he was out there on his bike. He would bike up 2-3 miles, cheer us on. He'd have, you know, power bars and pickle juice and water and Coca-Cola and everything. Like they went out of their way to like support us. And all that was probably like my one biggest fear. 'Cause when you do like an actual marathon, for lack of a better term, they have somebody every mile. You want a cup of water, you want a Gatorade, you want some protein, something like that to keep you going. So that was a good relief. I would say the one of the funnier parts of the run. So I had the wife had a small little bottle of suntan lotion she gave to me. I forgot to put some on before we went out. So I wanted to have it on me because I'm like you. I burn in 5 seconds in the sun. But right. I will say the path that we did was pretty much 90% in the shade. But so I decided to clip it on the back of the backpack where I had my water container on it. And probably around like mile 19 as I'm running, I notice like from the side of my eye, something's dripping out from the back of my my backpack. And my first thought is, oh, crap.
It's spring a leak.
You know, my water is getting loose and all. Then all of a sudden, Izzy starts freaking out because she looks in the back of my shirt and she's like, you got shit on. You got shit on by a bird. The bird shit on you. She is freaking out because she has some kind of fear about birds crapping on you. And what? I can't explain it. She doesn't, like, when she's outside, it's not like, oh, I see a bird, I gotta run inside or something like that. But she has some kind of instinctual fear of being pooped on by a bird. So when she saw the whiteness on the back of my shirt, all she thought about was a bird crapped on me, and she started panicking.
I'm just loving the dynamic between the bird poop fear, the you petting dogs, the Disney obsession, the running long mile. I feel like there's a new melting ice. I feel like there's like a lot of fun quirks being mixed into a pot of at least interesting podcast conversations. That's
Yeah. I mean, when in doubt, I'll just start thinking for 5 seconds. It's like, oh, by the way, and then we have.
Oh, by the way, I dress up in skirts and serve beer at the local restaurant. It's just something I do. It's just something I
was
going
to promote that next week, but okay.
So did you ever have a quit moment in the race?
I'd say around 24, 25. I wasn't saying quitting, but I was walking a little more than running because, again, when I injured my IT band previously, it was bad. So when it started feeling sore, all I could think about is, oh, I'm going to be out of commission for a week and a half.
Is that because you've been working in IT for so long that you've strained your IT band?
Oh, look at you. That's a good old joke. Did you use that in your virtual comedy show?
Yeah, I opened up like, hey, I have a friend, Mike. He works in IT. He ran a marathon. Guess what's sore? His IT band.
Oh! Oh, no, you did it!
But, so no quit moments. You were pretty much good the whole race?
For the most part, wife was pretty beat. Friend took off on us like with the last mile to go. It was one of those, she had adrenaline. She's like, I gotta let this go because if I slow down, I know I'm gonna lose it. But
Yeah. And
that's awesome, man.
6 hours walking in the park and just chugged a bunch of beer, ate some cheesecake, ate some Buffalo Wild Wings, and
I
survived.
Was there stops along the way, or you just went straight through?
We stopped from time to time. I mean, we didn't have like crazy durations of gone. Like twice the girls went to go to the bathroom. You know, like I said, when we meet up with our friend and all, if I have like a bar, I'll sit there for a minute and stretch out. I mean, even if I do like a regular marathon and all, I know at some point when we get to a mile point, I have to stretch out the legs, stretch out the arms, because if you're not trained, you will wreck yourself. There is no doubt about it. Sure. I mean, and just a shout out to J-Mac, Coach Johnson's player who did a marathon in 2 hours and 45 minutes. I have no clue
how or superhuman strength
somewhere like that. I mean, that's a man right there. There's no that will. Likely never be the story of Michael Berlut, that one.
So. That's all right. You're making your own story, pal. Your story is going to be a bunch of mediocre podcasts, and he ran a marathon, and that's going to be your wake.
Well, the movie will be 10 times better than the book.
The movie will incorporate all 26 laps on the mile track. guys,
why is this longer than Endgame? God dang it.
Guys, we have so much coming up for you guys. We're real excited about some of the stuff we have ahead, but also excited about this episode. But we've had such a tremendous run over this last half a year, not even halfway there yet. And it's just unbelievable who we've gotten to talk to. So I hope you do go back and check out some of the last episodes after you listen to this one. I just posted a little thing right before this. So I'm just going to, before Berlo promotes, I'm going to promote just us. Just because it's been really cool. The last 4 weeks, we've had Butterbean on. We've had Kevin Eastman, creator of Ninja Turtles, Dyson Knight from the Baja Men, Sean Kanan from General Hospital, Bruce Valanche from the Oscars and Hollywood Squares, and Jack O'Halloran, former boxer from Superman, and amongst other people, Mike Reynolds from Earthships and The Garbage Warrior on Amazon Prime. It's just been a really cool run. We were in a lot of fun places, and guys, just subscribe to us on iTunes and follow us on Instagram and Podbean and everything else. You could just look us up and follow us on all those things. Really appreciate the listenership. So a lot to come very soon. Mike, what do you got to promote?
To promote, we'll continue with what we're on, and we're going to talk about the RTF Sports Network.
Yep.
We joined their podcast network just this week. Great bunch of, though we don't always talk about sports, but we're kind of like the... you know, the social kind of episodes of this network, but they have tons of different shows on there. It's dealing with college, MLB, NBA, NFL. Basically, it's a sports network with guys who really know what they love and they love to talk about it. So while we're on there, check out the other shows, the RTF Sports Network.
.com. Yeah, it was really cool. The other day they posted that we were on, and I don't know, it was cool like clicking on their website and our show was like leading off the day, like 8 o'clock in the morning. Our Kevin Eastman interview was on. It was really cool, man. So other than that, I want to thank Josie Cotton for her great interview tonight, guys. So much on the horizon. And that's it, man. Life is funny and laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Bye bye.
See you, Badger.